Welcome to this one-off podcast special from Advantage, looking at lessons to be learned from students' union governance. My name is Dan Tinkler, and I'm our governance development manager here at Advantage, and I'm joined by Nick Smith and Victoria Aurora Bennett-Salvador. Nick is an Advantage associate and has over 15 years' experience in supporting institutional and students' union governance, and is also secretary to 5 students' union boards. Victoria is the current president and chair of the trustee board at Birmingham City University Students' Union, where she's been in the movement since 2017. In addition to this, she's also a student governor with Birmingham City University. She has been responsible for igniting change through the Governance Review Steering Group and chair of the trustee board, and has internally developed the board in facilitating active engagement with trustees, carrying a recruitment drive for external trustees, and ensuring accessibility to knowledge through different methods of delivery. Today, we'd like to look at what is so unique and special about students' union governance, how it works, delve into an often misunderstood world, and where our higher education institutions, universities, colleges, small and specialist institutions can learn from the world of SU governance. So I'm going to open up with a quite open question of what makes SU governance unique? And over to you, Nick, if you would mind answering that first.
Thanks, Dan. I mean, that is an open kind of question, and I'm going to give quite an open answer, I'm afraid, which is that I think there's lots of things which come together to make students' union governance unique. You might point to one or two at a time, but I actually think there's quite a variety of things which coming together are kind of the key things. On one level, I think, you know, if you look at the wider charity sector, one thing that's interesting is that most charities do a specific job. They might be service provision, in that they kind of provide homes for the homeless, or they could be doing kind of campaigning, in that they campaign to end homelessness, or they could be giving a voice to people by saying that they kind of make sure the rights of homeless people are understood. And of course, you can tell by the way I've set that up, students' unions are unusual in the charity sector because they do all three. They are both service provision in terms of societies and clubs and things like that. They also give advice on issues that affect students, and they campaign for students' rights, which I think is probably the image that most people have of students' unions, that kind of tanky kind of campaigning aspect. And they do all three. And that is quite an unusual thing to have to kind of be in charge of in terms of governance. And hopefully astute listeners will realise that that's also the same for universities, in fact. You are providing a service in terms of education, but also we know there's an expectation to do work on support for students. And also there's this idea of civic universities doing things in the local community, doing things for the wider good. So I think that is unusual for both kind of organisations. The other thing that's obviously particularly interesting for students' unions, and I think this is one that you may have been alluding to, is the way in which we choose our governing bodies. We are required by law to have elected representatives in a certain way. And almost all students' unions, I think all but one, have those people automatically on their board of trustees. It makes perfect sense, because if your primary job is representation of students, then of course you want your student representatives to be part of that body. But that does mean that turnover is high. You can't do more than 2 years as a sabbatical officer because of the Mandatory Education Act. And you also have students who are only going to be there for 3-4 years, maybe. So whereas if you look at broad kind of charity governance codes, they say you want someone to be on your board for 6 to 8 years. You want them to be appointed based on their expertise. What we do is say we're going to have people on for maybe 2 years at a time, maybe more if you're very, very lucky. And a chunk of them are going to be elected based on their ability to represent, not appointed based on their governance skills. And those two things, I think, in particular, make students' unions quite unique. So, yeah, that's my opening. I could chat about this for far more, but I think that's my opening statement.
Thank you so much for that wonderful answer, Nick. And coming over to our authentic student voice from Victoria, what would you say makes SU governance unique?
I must say, just feeding off from what Nick has said there around officers and that kind of 2-year turnover, that really is the piece that makes SU governance the most unique. But what it does, I think, in the best way, and this is something that is really important, is that because students are voting those people in, it keeps the board so relevant to the output of what they need to be doing. And part of the best bit about SU governance, and thus probably the most unique part, is the representation of students who are, in fact, the customer, if you were to think about it in that way. I use that term very lightly. But the way in which we look at our board and the officers who then sit, and so, for example, myself as chair of the trustee board, I recruit in external trustees. Those external trustees will change every so often, but that recruitment piece of who leads that is elected and chosen by the officers. So the person who's more likely to come in is more likely to reflect and represent the students that the board is serving, rather than a kind of long-term piece that can make it quite stale in terms of change. So that would be, you know, the one thing that I would say. I mean, absolutely, as Nick said, we are very complex. You know, you've got the Education Act of 1994, the Charities Act of 2011, and in some cases, the Companies Act of 2006. So that's a lot to kind of bear the brunt of. And a lot of our students who are coming in will range in ages. And that also lends itself to SU governance, is that the people involved will never necessarily have the same outlook on the way that the board should handle themselves. What that allows for is really good, diverse conversation.
Fantastic. Nick, I'm going to invite you in on this.
Well, you know, Victoria's made some fantastic points, and I completely agree. That there's, I suppose there's two things I just wanted to kind of pick up on. Some people might call me an experienced kind of member in this area. You know, maybe I'm just old. But I do remember about the time of the Charities Act in 2011, there was a big shift in students' unions, and we looked at our governance. What was fascinating was that if you look at the wider charity sector, they were doing the same, but from the opposite way. So in those days, students' unions just had students on there. They didn't have anyone else. And we were saying we want some kind of external expertise to add to that authentic student voice that people like Victoria bring so wonderfully. Whereas if you look at the wider charity sector, you've got people saying, hold on a second, we are, you know, as I say, a homeless charity with no one who's homeless on our board. We have no authenticity of Victoria used customer, but you might use client. We've got none of that authenticity in our structures. And actually, it's been really fascinating to see that students' unions come at it from one way and the wider charity sector coming at it from the other. And we've kind of met now in the middle. We're now at a stage where we've got both voices of our clients on our kind of boards, as well as external expertise as well coming together. So we've kind of met in the middle. The other thing that I think is really interesting about diversity, I know we're going to talk about this later on, but I do think that, you know, people sometimes forget that the way that trustee boards and boards of directors are designed is to bring together diversity, to have kind of competing views, to not be a monoculture. And students' unions do that incredibly well. And so that's not something that I think is necessarily unique. I think it's a real strength of students' unions compared to other boards that I've worked with.
Fantastic. Thank you both. I'd like to come in on a point which Nick mentioned, where you spoke about how officers are often elected on their ability to represent, not to be governors, trustees. So how do you work with that challenge for people who've been elected into a representative role to become good trustees, and for those who sit on university boards as well to be good governors?
Cool. Well, the first thing I would say is that I think sometimes people can worry about this too much. And again, I would say, look, if you were setting up a medical charity from scratch, you'd want some practitioners in healthcare to be on your boards because they're the experts in medicine, right? In students' unions, you're a representative organisation, and so you've got the experts in representation, the elected officers there. That makes perfect sense. So I think people worry about that too much. But what I would say is that, of course, they need training and induction, and they need to learn some of the processes that you might go through. That's the same for any trustee, any kind of governor. It's just that student trustees do that at a younger age. But of course, what you don't need to induct them in is the culture and the kind of the history and the background of the institution, because they're already part of it. And that's an incredible advantage. And I think sometimes people talk about things like induction and training and say, oh, it's difficult if you don't have years of experience. But very often you do have people who've got years of experience of the institution where they're a student governor or a students union trustee, and you know, you don't need to train them in that, and that's a real strength. They can really hit the ground running on some of those things. But I do think that, like with any trustee, any kind of induction program should think about their strengths, think about their weaknesses, talk it through, and try and make sure that they're kind of properly supported. Maybe I should declare an interest at this stage, because I run trustee inductions for most of the summer. I'm going to be going up and down to students' unions doing this. But I do think that there's a way of engaging people and getting them to think about what they need to do. That's the same for student trustees as any other trustee or university governor.
Thank you, Victoria. I'm going to invite you in on this.
Brilliant, thank you. Having gone through 2 years worth of training for trusteeship position, as well as, you know, governance and all this kind of side of things, I found training can be, one, really beneficial to talk things through in terms of the, I'm going to call it the boring bits. I don't mean that they're boring. I just mean the paperwork side of things, which can be quite long when you're trying to get into the student movement and you want it to kind of hit the ground running. But one of the key bits that comes from the governance training that we have is the clarity on where your voice is best applied through your governance structure. And I think that's a really important part of student union governance, especially for trustees who are officers, but also for student trustees. We find that student trustees can struggle with getting their voice into the right places of student governance. And I know we're going to go on and talk about this in a bit. But one of the key areas around training that's really important is helping student trustees like myself as officers facilitate and support other student trustees to engaging in the conversation that's happening on the board, because it makes for a great conversation.
Made me think of a really important point there, that actually we've got on students' unions a large number of, well, it's a dominant number of student trustees. And yes, Victoria, you're right, that ages range, but by and large, we tend to see younger trustees than the sector average here. So what actually works to improve engagement? And if you were thinking about this, of you were a university, college, specialist provider, and you were running the governance for your institution, what would you be doing to engage your student governors based on what you've seen work in students' unions? And Victoria, I'm going to come to you first on this one.
Sure, absolutely. Great question. And one that we tend to ask ourselves a lot internally at Birmingham City University Students' Union. With what we've done, we found the way that we present information can really be either an access or a barrier to the way that they engage fully with our board. And that's things from presenting papers, not as papers, but as presentations, creating infographics that are engaging and are easily understood, and also using plain English. We understand that academic jargon is used a lot in a lot of our university meetings, and then we're also within the student movement and student union sphere, we also have our own terminology that within itself can get quite confusing. And so one of the challenges of improving access is around the way that we deliver our information, and thus the knowledge sharing that we're doing with our student trustees. So they feel capable of commenting and they feel that they themselves truly understand. And then another piece is the way that we do touch points. Now, one of the things that we see happening at universities across the board is that there'll be a really high spike in interest in their course at the start of the year. By the time we hit around Christmas, things start to kind of wane off. And then we get back into January and they kind of see this new spike up again. So how, during that time, do we ensure that they stay interested in our governance structure in the way that we want to kind of run our students' union? And that key piece is around touch points and making it interesting, understanding them and creating a personal relationship with your trustees is a really important part of how engaged they become. And I don't just mean the chair of the trustee board. I'm talking the whole of the trustee board. So from executive officers through to senior managers who sit on the trustee board itself. And we've seen really good uptake in these brilliant little one-to-ones that we have. But it's not one trustee to one trustee. It's the group of trustees together with myself and the chief executive on a routine basis. And then those trustees can also engage with the executive officers outside of those meetings. And that's been a great way of telling whether or not they understand what it is that we're talking about. And doing that sense checking is a really important part of thriving student trustees.
Thank you for that. It was a fantastic answer and shows the work that you've built as an organisation here into achieving a really positive board culture. And Nick, if I could ask the same question of you, of what would you do to improve engagement of student young trustees?
It's an interesting one. And I think before I answer that, one thing that I do think is important is this idea of kind of culture. And I would also say this is very true in university governing bodies. Sometimes I think there's a perception that young people won't make good trustees because they are not experienced or they're uninformed. And I'm a bit cheeky with this because I've occasionally played a game called Professor or Student Trustee. And some things that people have said over the years, I ask the audience to guess who said, why do we have to follow HMRC's guidance anyway? And can't we get another legal opinion if we don't agree with that one? And, you know, I think student trustees are as likely, perhaps, to not get things right as maybe some people that we would automatically put on our governing bodies in universities. So I think that what I would say is that this perception that it's always a challenge with younger trustees, I would say that's not always the case, frankly. One thing that I would also say is that if you're, certainly in terms of the governing body or any trusteeship, if your university, as part of their kind of learning objectives for students, is to allow them to engage in critical thinking, to challenge ideas, to look at things and try and probe them a bit, then if you've got someone who's spent 3 to 4 years doing that, and then you get them on your governing body, that must be great. Because the one kind of skill that you want every trustee to have is the ability to probe, the ability to kind of critically think about the information they're given. I think actually with younger trustees who have come through, or people who have recently graduated, they've got those skills they were using every single day in their classes and in their seminar rooms, and they bring them onto your board. That's probably really helpful. Whereas some of the other people on the board who have not done that for a while, maybe since they were at university, they might have lost that a little bit. So I think that I would say that one of the key strengths of student members is that whilst they might not necessarily be informed, they've probably got some really good skills. And so back to your question about how do you engage them, I think it's about ensuring that the questions they're asked are based around skills and based around their critical thinking. If you ask someone what their opinion is on the SORP, they may not be able to answer you. But if you ask their opinion on the way that, on the way things are structured, perhaps, or getting an external view, asking them to challenge some of the preconceptions, I'm sure they would be able to do that. And indeed, that's probably what they've been doing, as I say, in their classrooms for the last kind of couple of years. So engage them by bringing them in on those skills, but you don't need to ask them about the investment policy. That's why you've got someone who works in investments to do that.
Fantastic, thank you. So I'd like to move us on to looking around how students' unions have embraced and supported diverse governing bodies and embedding inclusivity practices in there. As you may be aware, we've been doing quite a lot of work at Advance HE on board diversity in recent years, including statistical reports, putting the first one out in November 2020. So students' unions are often diverse boards based on who we've seen being elected and that election of representatives, which doesn't always come through as strongly in university or higher education institution governing boards. So what do you think higher education institutions can do to learn from students' unions in supporting diverse governing bodies, whether that's recruitment of more diverse student governors, external governors, independent, through staff governors? What's the secret to the success? And I'm going to go over to Nick first.
The good news is, Dan, is that I've got the secret to diversifying boards right in my pocket. I've just decided not to give it to anyone. but I've had it for years. I think in terms of what are some of the possible ways that you could diversify your board, I think one of the things that students' unions have been good at is looking above and beyond. I mean, and as we mentioned earlier on, students' unions, about a third of their students are elected. And you're right to say they are quite often more diverse, just as a general kind of look at the demographic of the overall population. The younger you are, the more likely you are to be part of a diverse group in terms of race or ability or sexual orientation. That's just the kind of demographic. So on one level, students' unions benefit from that fact that they are kind of a third to two thirds are elected from the student body. They've got an advantage there. What I would say is that I do think that students' unions have also been able to go, well, hold on a second, that's fine from that chunk, but we do have some control over the appointment process. Victoria was talking about this with her lay trustees earlier on. You know, you do have an ability to choose something there. The good governance code for charities says that you can look at diversity of your board and you can kind of recruit on that basis. And I think they are willing to go above and beyond. I also think that students' unions are good about applying that EDI practice throughout their decision-making. And I think that's something that university governing bodies could certainly learn from. And I've lost count of the number of times I've seen governing body kind of front sheets for their papers. And there's kind of that EDI thing, the quality impact assessment. And it always kind of says, not applicable, or kind of, you know, there might be one or two things occasionally. And I remember seeing this at one stage on the budget for the year that said, oh, there's nothing to do with quality and diversity that we need to worry about here. And I thought, well, if the allocation of resource isn't exactly where the massive impacts on equality and diversity can be in your budget, if you haven't thought about it in that area, then you've probably missed a trick, because if anywhere, that's really where it's going to apply. And so actually, I think that one thing that universities can learn from in terms of equality and diversity and inclusion is applying that beyond just the diversity of its members and seeing about where it fits in throughout the entire organisation and the decisions that they make. So I haven't really answered your question directly, I'm afraid, but I think there's a challenge there, perhaps.
Fantastic, Nick. Thank you so much for that. And Victoria, what do you think can be done to improve diversity of governing bodies, taking lessons from students' unions?
Just before I get on to that, I cannot believe that you've seen equality impact assessments that say not applicable. Unbelievable. Really, a shock to my core, that. Anyway, you know, I think one of the key bits that I took away from the governance steering committee that we did for Birmingham City University and like the lessons learned on this is about understanding, and Nick's touched on this, it's about understanding where the culture of the business is at for ED&I. And everybody's got to be behind it. So the board itself, the board of governors, for example, for this university that I'm at, it had to get every member thinking about how EDI plays a part of the board. And that within itself is a task. And one of the things that I think presents itself because of student union ways of being is that we're all already thinking quite strongly about ED&I. There is something to be said about intersectionality and how that kind of plays into the way in which we diversify ourselves. But because of the types of people that tend to be involved in student unions, the background of activism and the student movement being in many ways at the forefront of big changes that have been made, that have moved that, I'm going to use the Overton window as an example here, moved and shifted that Overton window of diversity, inclusivity, and the way we perceive intersectionality. Universities can definitely learn to perhaps take a step back. You're sat on a board, especially if it's a board of governors, take a step back and assess who you're surrounded by, what their skill sets are, and also take into consideration, are you absorbing a space that is better placed for somebody else who hasn't had the opportunity yet? Because there are so many people out there who have exactly that, not been given the opportunity for a number of different reasons. And allowing that system to continue stops us from being able to diversify who we're surrounded by, the voices that we're hearing, and above all else, the insights that we're gaining to better develop our outputs as a board. So, lastly, the one thing I would say, and the piece around recruitment and the way we handle recruitment, it's about making sure that the person on the board who's overseeing recruitment works with the internal staff team of the university, because that plays a really key part in the way that a university will run their recruitment and this appointment of board governors. But also, they have a way of unpicking perhaps some of the more difficult knots that sit within the culture of the board to allow the move to change. When we did the governance steering committee, we needed the full support of the secretariat team to be able to create this change, because they're the ones who are doing all of the groundwork to get us to where we need to go to create the appointments. So in all honesty, it takes a roundabout, just quite as Nick said, it takes that roundabout working of everybody being on the same page to move the board forwards.
Brilliant. And I want to pick up on that sort of exec staff level and governor level, and you know, in SU world of where it's a bit different, where you have the exec officer trustee and senior management relationship. The difference being that in students' unions, the exec officers and the senior managers, they work together every day, share an office space quite often, or when we're in building, share a building, which doesn't happen in a university or higher education institution. So how do you build that strength of relationship that you see in students' unions between officers / trustees and senior managers, and take those lessons and apply it to governors, independent staff, student, with exec management? And I'm going to ask Nick if he wants to come in on this first.
In some ways, I'm going to cheat. And so Victoria's talking alone about touch points. And I think that students' unions have got this kind of inbuilt, this fact that you've got that interaction between chief execs and kind of chairs of the boards, because they're also, the chairs of the boards are also the presidents, okay? And there's challenges with that. And I think that we have spoken for, there's been a model that we've talked about in the student union world for several years now about hats and about people wearing the right hat at the right time. Is it your trustee hat? Is your activist hat and whatever? And I think, as an aside, I think there's something that universities can learn from that. And I've certainly been in meetings where I've thought, hold on a second, this is a strategic meeting, but we're talking about operation. That's because, you know, day to day it's your area of work, and you're talking about the operational, the strategic, and that this will be people that work in governance, this will be a kind of famous kind of phrase, but it's kind of, is it operational, is it strategic? And sometimes, of course, it's a bit of both and all of that. So I do think that you know, that there's lessons to be learned from the way students' unions have dealt with that quite successfully, I would argue, over the years, is in there. But I do think it's those touch points is a really key thing. It's understanding that your board isn't there just for Christmas, and then also again in the spring and in September and in August. Like, actually, they are people that you should be engaging with all the time. I use this analogy quite a lot. In The Wizard of Oz, there's a point where they go and meet the wizard for the first time, and it's this kind of great green head that exists somewhere, and you don't see the bits behind. And then eventually, of course, you do. That's a spoiler for a film that's been out for 80 years, so I don't think it's that big a spoiler. And I think that kind of all types of organisations, including universities, could do better at saying, let me show you the workings behind a little bit. Let's meet the people that are on your governing bodies, and vice versa. You know, it's not just the head of a state. There's an estates team. Come and meet them as well and do a bit more of that kind of interaction. So I would say you need a toto in your institution, your governance teams, to pull back the curtain a little bit.
What a wonderful analogy. I was not expecting Wizard of Oz when we set this up, but there we go. Victoria, if you can pull out a film from sort of 20 years later now for an analogy, that would be great. But no spoilers. Don't ruin it like Nick has for everybody there. So, no, Victoria, that same sort of question to you of what can be taken from the way the management and trustee relationship works in students' unions and reply that to governor and exec management in universities.
for now, I'm definitely going to strengthen the point that Nick has just made there, because one of the suggestions that came from the student trustees, which was myself and one other person for this Board of Governors, was around bringing the university into the Board of Governors, because despite the fact that we were talking about the university, it felt like we were talking about a completely separate entity. And that's not to say that we get into the nitty-gritty of the operational stuff, because that's not what the board is there to do. But what the board can be there to do is to thoroughly understand the people that they're serving. Because at the end of the day, that's the premise of the reason they're there. So bringing in students who are campaigning for gender-neutral toilets on campus to present to the Board of Governors to show them this is what we're working on, this is some of the things that we've kind of seen, and this is the way that the university is actually working for us. It's really important and actually imperative to the way that governors think about the decisions that they're making. It also puts protected characteristics at the forefront of their mind and help the board to truly understand something that perhaps reflects their protected characteristics, and gives the governors a better understanding of that protected characteristic, which they may not have themselves, to best apply a decision when they're making a decision on the Board of Governors.
What can you do from the SU and officer, senior management and officer relationship, and take that and apply it to the exec at university and governor relationship?
So taking that into consideration when we're looking at the relationships that can be had between university management and the Board of Governors, it's about ensuring there's topical conversation happening, perhaps more informally, in and around the Board of Governors than just the oversight that is happening at the Board of Governors. One of the things that the governors have really enjoyed from me is hearing about the workings of the campaigns that I'm running, because it helps them understand what the students are actually truly asking for, which helps set a precedent for the way they perceive the workings of the university. So perhaps there's more to be said about ensuring that university management support its student governors. And if they don't have student governors on the board, they need to start getting student governors on the board, because student governors will really help to support the understanding of your governors in the decisions that you're making, and not be of detriment when you're trying to apply a narrative to something that is so strategic that you're not even looking perhaps at some of those operational metrics. So the last bit that I will say is that and it brings me back around to my point originally made around the secretariat team and their importance to underpinning how good governance is they deserve a lot of respect and they don't get half as much credit as they should. So I'm just going to throw that out there. Big thank you to all secretariat teams out there. The way in which Board of Governors engage with the secretariat team should be to proactively ask them questions about things that are coming up, but also for the university management to utilize a secretariat team to deliver the information that perhaps is missing of the way in which the university is working at a more operational level, still linking to that strategic oversight. And it's perhaps something that could play into things like the Vice Chancellor's updates and those touch points that are had prior to big meetings, where you perhaps have the chair of the Board of Governors go along and meets with the Vice Chancellor to have that one-on-one conversation about how things are going. Where's that information going? How is it utilised? Where can we share those things out?
Fantastic. Thank you so much for that answer. So I have one, my killer question, if you like, that one question that if I could get a very succinct answer for is, if you could recommend one thing that can be learned from students' union governance for the higher education institution to adopt, what should it be? Nick, pressure on you first.
Okay, fair enough. Succinct. I think that students' unions are much, much better at induction and support than any other kind of governing body I've seen, not just universities. I think students' unions genuinely think about what governance means in a really deep way. I think they are really good on the whole at tailoring their training to the needs of the people coming on board. It's not just a let's get out the file that we kind of, you know, still mention TEFCI and that we've had for the last kind of, you know, however many years. It's actually, you know, I think they're really good at tailoring it. And if there's one thing that I think lots of organisations, not just governing bodies of universities, should do, is look at what they do for training and induction and steal some of that practice. That's my one thing.
Fantastic, Nick. So I'm going to follow that and break my own rule and say, if I was in a position where I was in the university secretariat, and if it was you there, would you be going for a conversation with the SU secretariat or chief executive to ask, what do you do as part of your board induction? Is there anything we can learn from, do together here?
I think that would be a nice starting point. I think the other thing the students' unions do well at is some of the big question stuff, some of the culture stuff. And I think I would be, you know, students' unions very often will do things like, you know, their board away days and things like that will be based on those kind of big questions. And I think that there's some good stuff that you can share from there. But yeah, absolutely, secretariats in universities. And I also think they're excellent. You know, full disclosure, I used to be one. But I would say absolutely chat to your students' unions, because it's quite lonely sometimes working in governance support teams. And you've probably got another one on campus somewhere you can chat to. So I think that's a great idea, Dan.
Fantastic. Thank you, Nick. And Victoria, the same question for you. If you said there was one thing that could be learned from the SU governance arrangements for a higher education institution to adopt, what would it be?
I'm going to come at it from a double-pronged approach, which is that perhaps the chair of the trustee board, so that would be usually the president of the students' union, and the chair of the Board of Governors would be meeting and discussing the practice that they're handling, because actually that is direct conversation of people who are upholding governance of both organisations. How awesome would it be if they actually saw eye to eye and were able to work together to really bring the Students' Union and the university together on the path of governance, as well as student experience and the betterment of the decisions that are made. And within that, though, is you're encapsulating listening to voices that are perhaps not well documented or represented on large boards like the Board of Governors. We only have 2 seats, and that's far more than I know of in other areas. And within that, we're still surrounded by, you know, 20 externals. So there is a disbalance on the voices that are being represented, and the chairs coming together perhaps could look at things like the way in which applicants are recruited for Board of Governors, having a governor who is sectioned off as being a graduate, a recent graduate of the university, could really help change and shift the dynamic of the voices that sit on the Board of Governors. So that's my piece.
Thank you so much. All that is left for me to do now is to thank our guests Nick Smith and Victoria Aurora Bennett-Salvador for their contributions today. It has been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. I hope it has helped people learn about the wonderful world of SUs and SU governance and where lessons can be applied and building relationships between universities, higher education institutions and students' unions. Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks very much, Dan.